Support comes from Catholic Charities. Driven by the message of love your neighbor, Catholic Charities is focused on improving lives in Maryland. Give the gift of love during this holiday season and learn more at cc-md.org/love.
I wanted to have adventures. I wanted to like have a pair of balls and be like a male writer, but I also asked my parents, like, are you okay with me taking the car into Baja California?
And I am a person who grew up in Annapolis who identified as like punk, goth, raverish, which is a thing. Look it up in the 90s.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Laura Wexler.
And I'm Jessica Hankin. And this week on the podcast, Girls Gone Wild. You are going to be hearing two stories from two people that you're kind of familiar with if you are someone who listens to this podcast. And these stories are of adventurous nights from their past. Let me emphasize, from their past.
You mean 5 minutes ago. Before we get started with the first story, we want to thank Mend Acupuncture, which offers enjoyable and low-stress acupuncture sessions starting at $35. Find them at their 3 locations in Baltimore, and they will take good care of you. So this first story is by a very neurotic, very uptight, and
beautiful. I mean,
a good girl who's trying to be bad, who's trying to step way out of her comfort zone. And these events then occur.
And that storyteller's name is Laura Wexler. Give it a listen.
Oh my God, the first storyteller's me.
So Laura and I, we've never done this. We threw our names in, both of us, because we were like, well, just in case no one.
LW, and I was going to, yeah. I wanted Jessica to pick it up and be like, who's LW?
No, it would immediately be like, it's Laura. But I'm so excited. Okay, so we're going to hear Laura Wexler's story about nightlife.
I feel like people will think this is an elaborately constructed show just for me to be the center of attention, but it's really not. So when I graduated college. I got to watch the 3 minutes. All right. You can ding me if you want to. I really wanted to travel around and get material for being a writer because I had read On the Road and I wanted. All right. I had read On the Road and I wanted to do the same thing. So I had a friend, we graduated, we worked over the summer, and then in the fall, so this was 1993, so I'm aging myself, we went out to an Indian reservation in South Dakota, and we worked there for a couple months, and I wrote a lot of really terrible poems about being there, and we finished our time there, and then we sort of set out camping all over, and everywhere we went, honestly, people were like, what are you doing? You're these two young women. Why are you out, like, just rambling around? And, like, the more I got asked, the more it enraged me that people were surprised or couldn't understand why two young women would want to be out, like, rambling around, like, doing the thing that, you know, so many legendary men and male writers had done. And so I was even more determined to have adventures and gather material. So, I guess it must have been like late November, early December, of 1993, we decided to go to Baja, California. And so we were driving around in my, Toyota Camry station wagon that had been supplied by my parents. And by the way, they were paying my health insurance and doing all this other stuff so I could, quote, adventure. And so the thing about driving into Mexico is that, you know, you have to have a special license. You have to do all this stuff that, I guess, and there's always this chance that, like, you're going to be hijacked by bandits and potentially kidnapped and stuff like that. Or there was at the time. Probably still is. So I wanted to have adventures. I wanted to like have a pair of balls and be like a male writer. But I also asked my parents, like, are you okay with me taking the car into Baja California? And they were not. They were not okay with that. My parents are extremely security conscious, and they could only think of bad things happening if I took the car into Baja California. So instead, what we did was leave the car on a street in San Francisco, and San Diego, and get on a bus and travel 12 hours down into the peninsula of Baja California on a bus, which would have been a lot of material, but I get extremely motion sick. So it was terrible. It was hell. But anyway, we got there and it was off season. So no one else was there. It was just me and my friend. We stuck out. She had red hair and freckles all over. I look like I do. And there was nobody in town. It was a small village called San Felipe, and which I think like ballooned when there were people there, but there was no one there. But there were two. So we went out to a bar. We got a hotel, put our stuff there, went out to a bar. And we met two American guys who were in town. And we proceeded to just get really, 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 really drunk on tequila. Very drunk. And I'm sure that we were the complete assholes and just stupid fools. And when I woke up the next morning, after I projectile vomited all over our bathroom, I realized that my purse was gone. And in my purse was my passport, my car keys for my car back in San Diego, and the plane tickets that I was using to fly home for Christmas, and then I was going to return back to my adventure. These were paid for by my parents, so all that was gone. So, and I was hungover like you just could not believe. So we went to the police, and they, of course, asked us, like, who were you with? Who could have done this? And we mentioned that we were with these American guys. And so they immediately glommed onto that. And I believe the American guys may still be in a Mexican prison as a result of that. I'm kidding, sort of. But in any case, I had no passport, no money, no key. I mean, this was exactly what my parents had said was going to happen. And I couldn't think of anything to do but go back to the U.S. And so that day, again, after like tequila, vomiting, I mentioned, I think, that I get motion sick anyway, got on this bus, like, horrible bus ride back to California, where like you were like at this, the bus was on the side of a cliff, and all you looked down and all you saw was the carcasses of the previous buses that had fallen off the cliff. And I got home, and I called my parents. I told them what happened. They were very disappointed. They bought a new flight, a new ticket, so I could go home. And so I flew home. I had like a normal holiday. Then we flew back. And the thing that I realized is like all I wanted was to have all these adventures, but I really wasn't good at having adventures, to be honest. I really couldn't like go that crazy. Like I could do stupid stuff, but I actually couldn't, like, I wasn't Kerouac. Like I was Kerouac if he had like still wanted to really please his parents and not get in trouble, you know? So that's my nightlife. And really I couldn't drink tequila for so many years. And I do think those guys are fine. I think they're fine. They must have gotten back. So that's my story.
Okay.
So yeah, that was me. That was then. This is now. I'm much more wild now, actually. I really am.
Yeah, that's cute.
Yeah, I have like the reverse of you, Jess. Like yeah. You were wild and now you're pretty tame and I'm just out of control right now.
Yeah.
Before we get on to our next story, we want to thank Baltimore Magazine. You can find them on the newsstand and at baltimoremagazine.com. They've got all the news about the latest indictments in Baltimore and restaurants and all that jazz. So check them out.
Okay, so this next storyteller, you know, she means well, she tries hard. Things don't always turn out well for her.
Yeah, give it a listen.
Okay, so I'm a person who comes alive at night. And this was especially so in college, which I think is, now I'm realizing I'm saying that as if I'm a unique individual. I think that's most fucking college people. So, okay, forget that. So, but it's college and it's 1993. And I'm the first person to go to college in my family. So like, no one really knows, like, no, I've gotten zero guidance and I'm at a state school. I'm at UMBC. It's a fine school. It's fine. At the time it was fine-ish. It was not great. And now it's much better. But like, I was in college. It was great. I grew up in Annapolis, so I'm hanging out a lot in Baltimore City, which feels very exotic for someone who grew up in Annapolis. And I am a person who grew up in Annapolis who identified as like punk, goth, like raver-ish, which is a thing. Look it up in the 90s. It's an amalgam. I was that amalgam. So, and the rave scene in Baltimore in the early 90s, it was a big scene. It really truly was. And so I, there's a day where I get word with some friends that there's going to be a rave. And the way back then, because there were no cell phones and, people had computers. I didn't know them personally. I went to UMBC. So we needed to go to a record store in Mount Vernon to obtain the rave tickets, which we did. And then we proceeded to get ready for the rave. So a rave, for those of you who don't know, is an all-night dance party. They were big in England, and then they came into the States in late 80s. So this is like they're at their prime. And so we get the directions for where it is. No idea where I'm going. But I do know that I have to look on point, which was not a phrase back then, but it was a phrase that I'm using now. So I got my raver pants on, which was, I was tiny. So I had like tiny waist, big fucking flared pants, white tennis shoes that had like heels like this. I don't know why. They were Vans. And then I had some sort of like t-shirt tucked in. The t-shirt was like, I don't know, like the guy who ran a race. I can't remember what it is. It's a name. It's a Japanese guy. I can see it. I don't know who it is. I didn't know who it was then. I just was like, this is what I'm supposed to wear to a rave. Hair in ponytails, and also a body that was pristine in the form of, like, I did not do drugs. I was not, like, a big drug person in high school. So I came into this rave with the expectation this is going to be the first time that I did acid. It was, like, a big deal. It was a big deal. And I had a keeper. I had this guy named Bob who was supposed to take care of me. Bob was at the time like kind of like asexual. Turns out not to be true. But like that's what he was supposed to be. He was going to take care of me. And so we went. And it's Baltimore, which is pretty close to Annapolis. And so I see someone immediately, because it's Baltimore, that I know from Annapolis. And actually, let me back up. We get to the rave, and it's in this industrial warehouse in Baltimore, which I'm now sure I've driven by like 45,000 times, but I could not tell you where we were. In the middle of an industrial park, we got let in. And whoever did these raves at the time had mega fucking cash, because the light shows and the sound systems were insanely good. This was like the best dance party. You talk about, like, it was insane. It was so we got there at around 11 p.m. It was already packed. And it was packed in a really, at the time, diverse way. It was not just white kids. It was like, at the time, I would call it a Benetton ad, which I didn't know, like, was a thing. Like, I just didn't know from Annapolis. I was like, this is amazing. And everyone is dancing. And the lights are beautiful. And I immediately go to the back just to kind of, like, scope out with Bob. And I see someone I know from Annapolis who's running the snow cone machines. Bob says, here's your tab, okay? You're going to have one tab. And I'm going to check back in on you in a half hour. And I'm like, okay, this is really exciting. Put the tab. I don't remember what I did with the tab down. I think I ate. I don't know. Put it on your tongue. I'm not a big acid person. So obviously, you'll know why after this story. So then I see the snow cone guy. It's a guy that I knew from Annapolis, like I said, 1,000 times. And he is like, would you like a snow cone? I was like, oh my God, it's so nice to see you. Absolutely, I want a snow cone. I'm doing acid for the first time tonight. And he's like, that's so fun. Here's a snow cone. So I get the snow cone, and I'm eating it. It's blueberry snow cone. I love blueberry snow cone. I forgot that I love blueberry snow cone. So I got my acid tab, eating my blueberry snow cone, like seeing people like in my ponytail and my like big shoes and my big pants. And then I go back to the snow cone guy, and I was like, oh my God, you're still here. He's like, absolutely still here. Would you like another snow cone? Yes, I want another snow cone. So I now have my tab of acid, my two snow cones, which it turns out were both dosed with acid. Yes. And I can't find Bob fucking anywhere. And it is now just a sea of people. And it proceeds to be a sea of people for literally the next 12 hours. And I quickly become the person at the rave that everyone's like, avoid her. Because I am like nothing is static. Everything is fluid. At people's faces coming up to me, I'm like, I can't look at you because your face is just like, it's just dripping. Your face is dripping. And then I'm going up to people like, hey, do you have any idea how long an acid trip is supposed to last? Because I don't want this to be going on anymore. And like going up to other people and being like, do you have any remedies for like an acid trip? And it's a nightmare. And then I eventually, at like 6 in the morning, I find the door to go outside. I'm like, I'm going to get outside. I'm going to figure out how to get home to Catonsville. So I like open the door, and it's a rainy night. And so it's become a rainy morning. And so the cars in the parking lot are just puddles of paint, beautiful puddles of paint. And I close that door, and I'm like, fuck that shit. I'm never getting out of this. Bob finally finds me. Bob has had a very fun night on ecstasy in which he has had sex with multiple genders. And he says to me, are you okay? And I was like, I'm in a corner. I feel like a rusted Campbell soup can has been slowly dragged through my bloodstream by a tiny cherub child. I'm on the floor of an industrial park. I'm not fucking okay, Bob. So he scoops me up, and we go back to our like apartment in Catonsville where everyone is going to meet up. And he's like, what do you want to watch? What's going to set you right? I was like, I need to watch Empire Strikes Back. Because that, I need to know something. And I know that movie. And so for that entire Sunday, this group of like ragtag friends sat and watched Empire Strikes Back on repeat with me. Like 6 times. And tried to get me to eat. And I was like, food is wrong. And then that Monday, I went to class. And I was like, I'm good with never doing acid ever again. That's my night story.
Young. We were so young when we thought. For you, like, you do not do well in altered states.
Oh my God, I hate them so much. And every time, I mean, it's not like I try that many times, but, you know, I'll be like, why not, guys? Yeah, it's been 10 years. Why not?
And then it just end up in that same old scary place. So don't do drugs, kids.
Yeah. This was a very big deal for us to share these personal stories with you, listeners.
Well, mine's really just about projectile vomiting. So I actually end up looking better than you in this.
That's true.
That's our stories. And before we get out of here, we want to thank The Wine Source, which is a awesome wine, beer, and snacks supplier at 3601 Elm Avenue in Hamden. Please visit us at stoopstorytelling.com to learn about upcoming shows or listen to stories from our archive. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stoop Storytelling Series. And thanks to Maureen Harvey for producing and to y'all for listening. We'll be back soon with more stories from the Stoop.
See ya. We both know I go too far.